The next case today is 5-24-0201, People versus Dean. Arguing for the appellant is Thomas Gonzalez. Arguing for the appellee is Justin Nicolosi. Each side will have 10 minutes for their argument. The appellant will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please note, only the clerk of the court is permitted to record these proceedings today.
Afternoon, counsel.
Good
Good
afternoon.
afternoon. As you can see, Justice Barberis is not present. He will be listening to recording of the oral arguments and will be participating in the ultimate disposition of this case. That said, appellant, if you are ready to proceed, you may do so.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Thomas Gonzalez. I will be representing the appellant, Jonathan Dean. Just wanted to point out I was not the initial attorney on this appeal. I inherited at the reply brief stage. I'm going to focus my remarks today, focusing on issue 1C and issue 3, unless the court has any questions on the other issues.
Counsel, what are issues 1C and 3? So I don't have
Okay.
to read the
Oh
brief.
yeah. I'm sorry. 1C is we're challenging the evidence failure to prove Dean's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt with respect to count one. With respect to
Okay.
count one, so that's issue 1C. And then issue 3 is the failure to give the jury instruction pursuant to section 115.10C.
So 1C would be the issue of the penetration claim, correct? Vaginal penetration.
Correct.
All
Correct.
right. Thank you.
Sure. So the state failed to prove Dean guilty of that particular count because MD repeatedly said that he never made any contact with her vagina with his penis. Count one is the count that specifically alleged that sexual penetration between his penis and MD's vagina within the relevant time period. And it's the state's evidence was wholly lacking on that because the CFC interview, she consistently denied that that ever happened. She specifically said that Dean never put his penis in her quote unquote pregnancy hole, which is what she referred to or called her vagina. Her trial testimony also makes no reference to any act of penis to vagina contact. She basically testified that Dean quote touched her private parts or her cooch. But then she testified that her cooch is between her legs. She did not specify which private part she was referring to. The vagina and anus are, of course, both private parts. She did refer to her anus as, quote, the other hole, and she maintained that Dean put his penis in her, quote, other hole. Boland's testimony, because this is what the state, I think, relies on primarily, is that Boland's testimony was equally lacking. She testified about MD's use of these anatomically correct dowels, where MD put the male dowel on top of the female dowel, putting the penis, quote, right at the edge of the vagina. But then she clarified that she's referring to the area between the vaginal opening and the anus. Now, the actual video of that CFC interview itself doesn't really show or definitively show the positions of the dowels. This is now just strictly Boland's word. I do acknowledge that at one point she testified that MD showed just the tip of the male dowel's penis, quote, going into the vaginal opening, unquote, of the female dowel. However, she later conceded on cross that MD consistently stated that Dean put his penis in her, quote, other hole. So her testimony on that particular count certainly didn't amount to proof beyond a reasonable doubt on count one. It also should be noted that in argument two, the state actually concedes that in Boland's CFC interview, she went out of her way multiple times to clarify for Boland that Dean never put his penis in her pregnancy hole, and that she refrained from adding other acts that did not occur. So the state can't have it both ways right now. So in sum, with respect to count one, at the very least, first of all, we maintain that the evidence was insufficient to prove his guilt on all counts, but again, at the very least, it was wholly insufficient with respect to count one, where MD repeatedly denied that any such penis-vagina contact occurred at all. Unless there's any other questions on that particular argument, I'll go ahead and send to issue three. So here, Dean was denied a fair trial where the jury was not instructed on how to weigh this very critical piece of evidence, this out-of-court statements that that the instruction was required.
What's your response to the state's argument that jury instruction 1.02 covered it?
Sure. Well, first of all, I think those instructions, they may convey similar principles, but they're geared towards two different aspects of the case and pieces of evidence for the jury to consider. So I think one basic answer is, first of all, if they were the same, there'd be no use for having 11.66. They're clearly not the same. And 102 in particular instructs the jury on how to assess all witness testimony that's presented in court. It's kind of a more general assessment of all witnesses, whereas 11.66, on the other hand, instructs a jury on how to assess out-of-court statements. An out-of-court statement made by a child witness in particular. It's very important because, again, if they were the same, there'd be no reason to have different instructions. And the state, of course, acknowledges that it was clear error for defense counsel not to offer this particular instruction. And I do want to come back to the language about that, just to your question, Justin McHaney, because, 102, it's cited in the brief, so I won't belabor it, but it says what it says. And again, it talks about the ability of witnesses to observe the age, the memory, manner while testifying, interest, bias, or prejudice, things of that nature. Whereas 1166, it basically says it's a lot more specific. If it were given in this case, it would have directed the jury about that you've heard evidence that MD made a statement concerning the charged offenses, and it's for them to determine whether or not, number one, she even made the statement, and number two, if so, what weight should be given again to those hearsay statements, the outcry statements that she made. And in making that determination, that they're to consider, of course, her age, the nature of the statements, and of course, the circumstances under which they were given. And I will stand on the brief, of course, with respect to issues two, but issue two outlines in detail what I maintain or the unreliable nature of those statements and why they should not have been admitted. But
State, do you think it's fair to say that 11.66 is asking the jury to pay particular attention to a child witness as opposed to the 1.02 with any evidence?
Sorry, Your Honor, was that a question for me?
No, that was for the, actually, it was for the state.
Well, that's me.
I'm sorry, it was for the defense, yeah.
Okay.
I'll
Okay.
make sure.
That's why I hesitated too, Your Honor, as I wasn't sure. I thought it might be directed to a counsel. But I think it is fair to say that because, again, I mean, I got the language right here. It says 102, it says only you are the judges of the believability of the witnesses and the weight to be given to their testimony. Their testimony of each of them. In considering the testimony, you may take into account his ability and opportunity to observe, his age, his memory, his manner while testifying, any interest, bias, or prejudice he may have, and the reasonableness of his testimony in light of the other evidence. Whereas, again, 1166 talks about the out-of-court statements. It talks about the hearsay statements. In this case, the statements made under section 115.10 and 115.10C, it specifically mandates this instruction. Okay, so they're clearly not the same. And and again, if they were the same, there'd be no reason to even have 1166. So one definitely speaks to the outcry statements in the context of a child witness. And I submit that in this particular case where MD's testimony was so lacking, wholly lacking, because her testimony was even more sparse, that it was even more critical that the jury be given 11.66. And to the extent that it wasn't, there's, I think, more than a reasonable chance that it affected the outcome of the trial, because they were given absolutely no guidance on this critical piece of evidence. And, as far as any direction on how to evaluate this very critical piece of evidence. So, and again, just pointing out how the state again concedes that it was clear and obvious error. The evidence was closely balanced, as outlined in issue one, in terms of, the unreliability of statements, the conflicting and the vague and the confusing testimony, and of course, all of the shortcomings of the CFC interview itself. So, barring any other questions on that,
Justice
we
Schiller,
maintain.
any further
I'm sorry.
questions? I was asked Justice Schiller if she had any questions.
No questions at this time.
Okay. Well, in sum, I would just reiterate that the court's failure to provide this critical instruction was a clear and obvious error, which again the state concedes, and it deprived Dean of a fair trial. Therefore, this court should reverse Dean's convictions and remand this cause for a new trial.
All right, thank you, counsel. You'll be given time for rebuttals. Now, state, you can answer that question.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. Mr. Gonzalez, my name is Justin Nicolosi. I represent the state in this manner. I'm going to start right with issue three. I feel like the conversation left off there with Mr. Gonzalez's argument. So while that issue is kind of right on everyone's minds, I'll ease into that one. And then I'll discuss issue 1C that counsel discussed. The state, again, as I wrote in my brief, I acknowledge that error was committed in this case. IPI 1166 was supposed to be given. But the state submits that that no reversible error committed was committed regarding the jury instructions. That is because IPI 1.02 was given. I quote in my brief that the case of People versus Sargent, which is an Illinois Supreme Court quote from 2010, where the identical situation happened. The jury there was also not given 11.66, but instead it was given, I shouldn't say instead, it was given 1.02, which again, they all deal with instructing the jury how to consider the testimony of a witness. I'll get to the word testimony. I know Mr. Gonzalez stressed that word. I'll get to that in a second. But the court and Sargent found that the jury was not without direction. It wasn't given nothing to determine how to judge the statements and testimony offered by a witness. It was given 1.02, and that was sufficient to establish that no reversible error, no prejudice occurred regarding the jury instruction. State submits this court has to follow People versus Sargent. It's the same situation, and it's binding on this court. Regarding the issue of the word testimony, which is prevalent in 1.02, but not in 11.66, Sargent also addressed that. Court noticed that it noted that it was highly likely that the jury understood that the recorded statements were akin to testimonial evidence. That's the same in our case. The statements were admitted pursuant to 115-10, and they were admitted for substantive evidence that the jury could consider those statements just like testimony. The jury knew that. Therefore, the fact that that was not testimony per se does not make that does not persuade in this case because again, those statements were akin to testimony. The victim testified. Those statements were provided. Or he was given some direction via 1.02 about how to consider this individual statements, regarding her memory, her bias, her opportunity to observe all these other tools that a jury can consider the weight of a testimony or a statement, and did in Sargent, the state submits that the court should find just as the Supreme Court did and find that no reversible error committed regarding plain error or ineffective assistance regarding the lack of 11.66. Moving back, I guess, to issue 1.01C, before I get to that, the state would argue that this court should affirm, of course, the convictions in counts two, three, and four. The record statements, the testimony, especially the statements of course, are overwhelmingly convincing regarding those three counts regarding the penis to anus contact, the touching of defendant's mouth with the victim's, or sorry, the defendant's penis with the victim's mouth, and the victim's vagina with the defendant's mouth. The state submits the evidence couldn't be any more strong regarding those three, and the court should resoundingly affirm those three convictions. Regarding the evidence pertaining to count one, state acknowledges that the evidence regarding the other three counts is certainly more prevalent and more a higher degree of quantity and quality than the evidence for regarding the penis to vagina contact. As I did in my brief, I point to the evidence supporting that count. Obviously, the jury found the defendant guilty of that count, and the state points to the fact that, again, as Mr. Gonzalez said, Ms. Boland's testimony that when demonstrating on the anatomically correct dolls, MD did position the male doll with, quote, just the tip, end quote, of the penis touching the female doll's vaginal opening. That supports the jury's finding. The MD also testified that the defendant touched her private part with his, very based on the anatomical doll snippet in the statement in the video. The jury could have used that testimony regarding the private parts as more support that the defendant did, in fact, penetrate his vagina, however the way. So they submit that's the evidence that and any rational jury trier of fact could have taken those pieces of evidence and convicted the defendant on count one, just like the jury. There any other questions? I'd be happy to answer them regarding the issues I discussed or the areas of this case that were not discussed.
Justice Scheller, any questions?
No, not at this time.
Very well. Rebuttal?
Sure. Just some brief comments. And I just, Counsel Nicolosi broke up there a little bit when talking about issue one, at least on my end. So, but I think I got the gist, I think, of what he was arguing. So, a couple of brief points. I'm going to start with issue three. It's basically the state's position is essentially that the two instructions are the same. There was no error, certainly no error that made a difference because 102 is enough. End of story. And that somehow the Illinois Supreme Court's or the decision in Sargent somehow settles that. And I submit that Sargent doesn't settle anything, and it's certainly not instructive to the extent that in Sargent, the state there of course acknowledged, like the state does here, that the failure to give the instruction was a clear and obvious error. So certainly there's that similarity. But again, in that case, in the context of addressing plain error, the court held that in Sargent, the evidence wasn't closely balanced because the defendant in that particular case basically confessed to the acts for which he was charged. That didn't occur here. That didn't occur here. He never confessed to anything. So we certainly didn't have that weight of evidence that they had in Sargent. And then Sargent went on to basically hold that relief wasn't warranted because this wasn't second prong. This wasn't that structural error. And in this particular case, Dean isn't arguing that it was structural error. We're arguing, again, for the reasons cited in argument one and for what I articulated earlier, that here the evidence was closely balanced because it did come down to a credibility contest essentially between Heather Dean and MD. And again, MD's testimony and her out-of-court statements were fraught with weaknesses for all the reasons previously cited. So that's my rebuttal on that point. And as far as counsel mentioned that, well, the jury could have rationally found or made the decision on count one that to decision to convict. But again, maybe because they weren't properly instructed in the first place, because they weren't properly instructed on how to weigh MD's CMC statements to the outcry witness. So that's critically important. And the only point as far as I'll make on issue one is, again, the state is coming back to Boland's testimony, which again, she contradicts herself twice, because twice She conceded and acknowledged that MD never made any reference to Jonathan penetrating her vagina with his penis or a pregnancy hold. So this is, and the state concedes as much in issue two. Basically says, well, she, MD made a point to go out of her way to make sure she didn't add any acts that didn't occur. So again, now the state's trying to have it both ways, talking out of both sides of its mouth by now saying that somehow Boland's testimony shows that that penis to vagina contact occurred. And after already conceding in his brief that it did not occur, that MD never went out of her way to insert acts that did not occur. So again, we maintain that the evidence was wholly insufficient. Even if Boland made that brief reference to the dolls, she certainly twice conceded that at no time did MD mention any kind of penetration with a pregnancy hold with Dean's penis. So again, we maintain that on all of the counts, but certainly at the very least with respect to count one, that Dean's conviction should be reversed. And for on issue three, that his conviction should be reversed and this cause remanded for a new trial. Unless he, are there any other questions?
Any final questions, Mr. Schiller?
No, thank you.
All right, counsel. We appreciate your arguments. We will take this matter under advisement, issue a ruling in due course.